Now, welcome back to the...
Today on That's Movies, Brother, we're going to be talking about the...
Just jumping right into it.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about DreamWorks Shrek, I think.
Wow. What year did DreamWorks Shrek come out?
It's 2004.
Shit, you might be right.
I think it is.
I'm going to say 2002.
Oh, I thought it was four. I don't know. When was Smash Mouth a thing?
For that 2001.
2001. Shit. Damn. All right, we're gonna be talking about DreamWorks 2001 Shrek with Mike Myers and Eddie Murphy.
If
not Mike Myers, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, Mike Myers.
Nicholas Myers. I wonder how much total money the Shrekiverse. Wow, 2001, it premiered at the Cannes Festival.
Oh, okay. When did it come out?
No, that's like when it came out. Like, it went to Cannes before general audiences. Like, they thought they
Do you think it was because of like the animation style was it anything special at the time? I can't remember. I mean, it looks okay.
CG.
It looks pretty good.
It's CG, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, did it go for like was it going there for like technical reasons? Like it was like,
I mean,
oh my god, look at this.
No, cuz I mean, it's not like crazy better. I mean, there are probably some like really technical stuff like from what I remember.
I mean, it looked
about,
good.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look bad.
Yeah.
But like Toy Story came out in 1995.
That's true, and it looks
pretty
really
much the
it
same.
Looks it does look pretty
except
good.
Except for, you know, I mean, Toy Story, the first one, has a lot of problems as far as
yeah.
like faces and stuff.
That's
like that.
Yeah.
And Shrek did.
In fact, they don't even show human faces.
I think Shrek did liquid physics in some things, like surprisingly well.
Oh, like all the swamp mud stuff.
Yeah,
and
that
like
kind
his earwax.
Probably
and
for
then
2001,
like,
that was probably like, you know, if yeah. you were in the industry, you were probably like, whoa.
You're like, oh
like,
shit.
Look
yeah.
at those liquid physics.
Ooh.
That's no,
definitely what mud would look like. Yeah. Or, yeah. Well, there was that whole scene. Oh, no, they had beer too, because there was that whole scene where he's
oh,
like,
yeah, yeah. The,
some
the
of you may
fight.
Die.
Yeah.
That's
John Lithgow.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
funny that that's him.
That's so good. That's a risk I'm willing to take.
I really want to know how much money Shrek has brought in.
How much do you think it cost to make?
I think I already saw here.
Is it like is it over 100 million?
Nope, $60 million.
I'm thinking it made
$60 million in 2001 was probably like
it's a pretty
$5 million.
Yeah,
today,
it's
right?
still pretty. Well, I mean, that's a decent budget.
That's still low.
For an animated.
That's still low. Yeah.
Oh, for $60 million for an animated? It's still, I mean,
yeah,
it seems for
yeah,
an animated
yeah.
one. It seems
I mean,
pretty
yeah. Because most.
What, was Toy Story made with $13 or something? Like, why, how much did they make?
Well, I don't know. Toy Story back in 1995, I imagine it had to be kind of expensive, though. Because, I mean,
it's
the cast
be.
They had in Toy Story as well.
That's true. Although, yeah, Tim Allen and Tom Hanks. Yeah, I forgot.
Tom Hanks in the 90s?
That's true.
He
yeah,
was
he
basically
was,
fucking.
He was a god.
Yeah. Robert Downey Jr. and I got Ronald.
Yeah, Ronald Downey Jr. That's his father. That's his grandfather.
Now I'm just looking at $30 million for Toy Story. What the fuck?
Wow, that is pretty.
They
worked
for free, dude. That's crazy.
Jesus, yeah. Pixar didn't make shit on that.
I didn't know Joss Whedon was on the screenplay writing team for that.
Oh, good for Mr. Whedon.
That's
how much? How
weird.
Old? God, how old is Whedon? I always forget how old he is.
He's got to be in his 50s, I guess.
Jesus. He never looks that old.
Born 64.
What the
I did not
fuck,
know he was
really?
That old. Yeah.
Jesus. Wow.
I mean, I guess it makes sense because Buffy started in 97. And
yeah,
he was
I mean,
writing,
yeah.
He was already writing on this in
yeah,
95,
yeah.
so
yeah.
fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. He's been in from the early get-go.
He's been in.
That's
not what we're talking about.
Let me properly introduce this.
Oh, okay.
Because if you're a little confused right now, you're still listening to the Movie Brothers. However, one's been swapped out. Tyler's gone. He's really trying
Temporary.
To distance himself
Temporary.
From the
oh.
podcast.
Just forever.
Okay. After all the controversies.
I like the idea that there was a controversy and that you didn't get swept up in it. Tyler got
no,
swept up.
No, it's all my fault, and he's just trying to get as much distance.
Oh, okay. You're just
possible.
Like,
yeah.
controversy be damned. I'm
yep.
still going for
yep.
it. Tyler has other avenues for success. This
I'm
is
the
all
last
Nate has.
Man alive who says cuties is good. No, just kidding. Back up. Bad joke. Cuties
wow.
is very bad. Don't watch
wow,
it.
So it's
Netflix.
Your turn to make the bad jokes
Netflix,
this time?
You
okay,
up.
Got it.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. That might arguably be worse.
There are people who defend that movie, though.
Well, okay, so the argument that I saw was that the only argument, I should say, that I ever saw for it was that the people who ended up watching it fully and then seeing that it was kind of a story of how these women or women, they're girls, they're young girls.
Yeah, it's
how they're taking an taking advantage
to,
of.
That's the point of
but
the
it's
movie.
So
but
provocative
no,
and
no,
ridiculous
they
in their advertising.
I started the movie to know because for this, and I've already talked about this before on here, but I started watching it and I got like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
in.
I remember you saying something
because,
about that earlier.
There are shots
it's
in that
so
that are
no,
so egregious.
Just the from what I heard, it was the angles because I think you had mentioned it
yes,
on our previous podcast.
Yes, they
you
shoot
saw
like,
the way that they frame the shots
there are, like,
are so bad.
And
yeah.
Shots in there. Yeah. And there's like changing. Like,
I was scrolling through Netflix and saw it, and it just like the not the poster image, but like the image that they play. Or like the little bit of the movie that they play, like, you know,
yeah,
how
yeah,
you're scrolling by
trailer.
And then like it gives you like, yeah, a little trailer. Like even that part, I was like, oh my God, this is
yeah,
this
it's
is
super
a bit
bad.
Much. Yikes.
They literally exploited children to make a movie trying to
about exploiting
talk
children.
About
yeah.
child exploitation.
That's like trying to make that's
so
like making 12 Years a Slave.
Job.
That's like making 12 Years a Slave and then making and making yeah, making sure that Oyelowo was a slave during the whole thing. Like that
hey,
is,
we're making this movie about slavery. Yeah, it was a real bad thing. Yeah. None of you guys are getting paid.
Yeah, yeah exactly. Bad news, guys.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oops.
Yeah. We're trying to be as authentic as possible. Yeah. Horrible. It would not work in any other aspect.
Did you I may have said this already before, but when they were doing casting for the movie,
I did not hear anything about
this. They had I think it was 650 14-year-old different 11 to 14-year-old girls twerk in auditions for them before they decided.
So do you think that was like the first round or do you think that's like that those were the only people they took seriously? Cuz I can only imagine if 650
Jesus.
People or however yeah. many you said like, that seems really low to me. I can imagine other parents taking, like, way more parents taking advantage of their children.
I can imagine watching thousands of children. 650.
I didn't say I, me, watching. I could just imagine how badly parents would want to.
Well, you can imagine, like, I imagine that at that level, this isn't just, like, an open casting call. You know, it's
okay,
like,
I got
these are, like, soft headhunted.
Yes, I'm
know,
sure. Yeah, I'm
at
assuming
some
that
point.
These are yeah.
It's all disgusting. This is
you're telling me that the people weren't chosen for this movie. Ooh.
How are you?
Hey, we got this great film.
Really goes to show that like parents of parents
shitty?
Of children,
young
actors,
young actors and actresses,
actresses,
yeah,
the actors and actresses,
terrible.
Will do anything.
Oh yeah, no,
because
they will sell their child's soul.
Yeah.
For a dollar, it's great. I love it.
But anyway, enough.
I've
talked
saying,
at length
yeah.
about cuties and my
problem
and all the problems with it.
No, but what are we here today to do?
We are doing an episode about movie science.
Right, but so Tyler's not here today,
yeah,
and
Tyler's
I'm subbing
gone.
In.
Tyler's gone. He will be back eventually. He should be back.
Once all the litigation clears up,
yeah. American Ninja Warrior is saying, you can't keep doing that podcast with that guy, man.
It's him or us, man. It's him or us.
It's barely legal. We can't have you associated with the NBC brand.
you toting that morality clause real close, guy.
No, yeah, he should be back next week. But until then, I have Jonah. Friend of
hey.
The podcast.
Hey.
Third time
third
on.
Third,
third
appearance.
Time guest.
I'm becoming more
He's
and more
the
frequent.
Easiest guest to get.
All right. And that's my time. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
We're taking callers now.
Yeah. Well, no, technically my fourth time on because I called and you picked up and I was on
I
the
guess
podcast.
That's, I guess that's true.
For all
of
like
true.
2 minutes.
Yep.
That was ridiculous. And I thought you were just doing a bit. But I then
we
I
were
watched,
doing a bit, but it
then
was,
I watched the podcast and I was on that shit and I was like, oh, I sound dumb.
Yeah, you did. Anyway, so I have Joan on here,
yep.
And we are going. Oftentimes, Tyler and I get into little side tangents.
I was
about
yeah, I was
movie
talking
science.
To you about how what is the thing that Nate and Tyler get wrong on their podcast. All the time.
Science.
It's the science. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just
it's whatever bullshit
board,
tangents that you guys go off
if
on.
If you can somehow consider it science, we got it wrong.
Yeah.
Which is bad because I'm pretty sure.
Well, not all of it, but
you
like
science,
you guys generalize really yeah, heavily yeah. and it's really funny to listen to. Like with anybody with a science background, mm-hmm. you know, obviously some of the movies that you guys go over, it not a whole lot of this applies, but there are some, especially in the sci-fi genre, and it's really fun.
So we thought it would be fun if we kind of go back over a lot of movie science, and mostly yeah. in science fiction, but in some other stuff. And my good scientist buddy here,
oh,
Jonah,
yikes.
PhD, nope. Jonah, science.
Nope.
You went to Yale? Harvard. Sorry. Yeah. That's right. One of those.
John Hopkins, actually. Sorry, yeah. Make it even more prestigious. Oxford, I think, is the most. Yeah. It was a dual. You know, I was in Oxford,
I
transferred.
Well, science is kind of a weird, like, if you're actually, because, like, Oxford and Harvard and Yale, I think of, like, lawyers or, like,
politicians.
I don't know. Yeah, law stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, like,
liberal arts.
Actually going into, like, hard science. I always think of, like, MIT.
Yeah, well, that would be, yeah, so hard science, yeah, you'd have, like, any kind of that, yeah, so MIT, anything.
Harvard.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, anything that ends in T, so any kind of technical college or university. I mean, that's where you're going to go. That's
that
for
MIT's
all the STEM.
Technical college.
Well, not, sorry, what I mean by it is, like, their name is, like,
yeah,
it's
literally technology.
Right, of technology,
is
yeah.
It's Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Institution?
Yeah, yeah.
I was about to say Michigan, but
no.
There ain't no fucking way it's
no,
Michigan.
No. Well, I mean, Michigan probably has some good programs, but.
Yeah, but no MIT,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
no
it's
MIT.
Sure, it's sure as fuck not Mississippi, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it's Massachusetts. That'd be funny if it was Mississippi. Come on down, we do science.
I'm from MIT. Oh, are you from the New England? No. Mississippi. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. So I did. Do you want to know what my credentials are for science?
Sure.
We'll give them out. I have two bachelor's degrees.
Great.
So I have another one after that. I have more information. I have two bachelor's degrees from the University of Georgia, and then I have both in science, and then a science field, I guess. One in microbiology, and then the other one in psych. And then I have a master's degree in biomedical sciences.
Diagnose me right now.
Which is, I could do that. It's not, you're not hard.
Not
narcissist,
hard.
I think. Is not hard, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, all right, fair. So
what is it, oppositional, what is it, the community bit? The oppositional diagnosis, fuck, I forgot now.
I'm pretty sure Abba just says Asperger's,
so
right?
No. When Britta was like having
oh,
to like
yeah,
diagnose,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, psych majors. Ugh, God,
they're the worst. They're the
there
worst.
There are so many psych majors.
Well, the only reason I did psych, and I didn't get tricked into it, but I kind of got hooked into it because I didn't come from psych. I didn't go into it going, oh, I can't wait to read people's minds and help people with their problems. I did not go into it like that. I went into it after taking psychopharmacology, social psych, and studying a bunch of the developmental psychologists in like the mid-1900s or mid-20th century. And so that, and then basically it was like, hey, if you take two more classes, you can get a whole nother degree in it. And I was like, oh,
right,
shit, why not?
Because microbiology was your main.
Yeah,
because,
microbio and the pre-med route
was basically the
way I was going.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, you're doing it fine, but I see so many people who are just going to, like, a state school and they get, like, a straight-up psych degree,
which is
better than one
well,
I
and
have,
then and then
but,
they Yeah, yeah. And then they go around, you know, just mentioning Maslow and asking
like,
people what their
Wait a minute. They don't need that many psychologists? You got to go to school for 8 more years to
be a
psychologist?
You tell me I'm just going
to
be a counselor now in a high school?
I guess I'll work in HR.
Yeah, pretty much. That honestly, that is where a lot of people go. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, other than shitting on people who have more degrees than me.
Go ahead.
So let's start off here.
Yeah. So we're going to be going over the different sciences of movies.
I'm going
that
to
we're
Google
ridiculous.
Worst.
Oh, I think I can tell
movie
you what the worst
science.
One is. Oh, it's going to be Day After Tomorrow and Total Recall.
I can attest to Total Recall.
I can
about
pretty
this
much.
A little bit
yeah, we. I think even I mentioned ago. This at one point about.
Oh man. Okay. I just when I clicked on this Goliath article, the first image I see is from 2012.
Oh, I
That's
forgot about 2012.
You remember?
Oh no. 2012, and then there's got to be one on there about The Core. Do you remember that one
the
with
core.
The Core with Aaron. Damn it. What
Aaron
it was
Taylor Johnson?
No. Urquhart. The guy who played Harvey Dent in Batman.
Oh.
Aaron Urquhart or something?
I thought that was
anyways, he's in it. The Core. The Core is a terrible movie.
Aaron Eckhart. Yeah.
Eckhart. Yeah,
yeah.
So that is a horrible science movie.
I have never seen
it. No. You've seen this. You've seen that. We saw this when we were kids.
What?
It is a bad movie.
Oh,
where they drill
the
down into
drilling?
The core. In a train submarine thing.
Why the fuck did we see this movie?
Because there wasn't I don't know. Because it was one of the sci-fi movies that we could watch that wasn't, you know, terribly in-depth, I guess.
I feel like we didn't see it when it came out. 2003, we would have been like, I mean, maybe we did. I don't know.
I would have been six, so Yeah. Not six.
You would have been nine.
I would have been nine, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, bad at math. I did science, not math.
Yeah.
It's different fields.
Yeah, that's weird. But no one's going to have seen The Core. But I just remember
not.
From
so
2012,
bad.
Which was that...
that's
was
the
that
one... Yeah, yeah, that's
it.
The one...
John
yeah.
Cusack.
John Cusack.
He's a limo yes. driver, and he's driving his limo with his family in it, like, down Hollywood Boulevard while the whole earth is crumbling
right.
behind it. And he's like...
And the whole...
And it's in a limo?
Well, remind
like,
me
what?
Again, the whole point of it was that they're trying to get to these arcs, right? Like,
yeah.
these giant cruise ships, essentially. Like, spaceships that float is what they looked like. And
I guess they were. I don't know.
And
why.
They were trying to get to these. They were just. And they were like, because they were basically. It's like Fallout. There's basically they were these giant, like ships that like rich people were getting on, and then they
yeah.
basically like got on somehow.
Yeah, because it was about like you know in 2012 the whole Mayan calendar
yeah.
thing ending in 2012.
Right.
So it was the end of the world, which was such a dumb thing that we for some reason.
Well,
all,
I mean,
like,
it's well, I, well, we're. I mean, our culture is obsessed with like the end of the world. If you think about it. You know, I mean, like, we want, I mean, if you think about all the cults throughout, like, the 70s and 80s that were all like, oh, the world's going to end. And then they were like, oh, but we got the math wrong just by a little bit. And so, like, every 5 years.
See you next year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then what did you say the other day when I mentioned that? You're like, oh, but your apocalypse dues are still.
Yeah. yeah, yeah, yeah.
Make sure you get those in.
Gotta get those apocalypse dues before yeah. the 12th. You can.
That
you know.
Was a good line. I like that one. But yeah, that was a terrible one. Oh, I also saw Waterworld. I have a couple issues with that movie.
Oh,
that's
Waterworld's
really
a weird movie.
Because there's no, we would never, huh?
I like Waterworld.
Oh, I
though.
Do too. No, the world, really fun, really cool. It like everything other than the fact that there's way too much water than the Earth has ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else makes
Waterworld,
sense.
Waterworld, it's Kevin Costner. This
yeah.
is like,
this is
like late 90s.
Yeah, yeah, I forget who directs it, but.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's like this. There's just
is that
water.
One, is that
everyone's
one Ron?
On
is that
boats.
One Ron Howard?
Fuck, maybe. I can't see it over. No. 95. Let's see.
I remember seeing that
no,
one pretty
Kevin
young too.
Kevin Reynolds.
Oh, Kevin Reynolds.
Yeah, we did see this one weirdly young, and it
I feel like this was a movie that our mom wanted or that she liked.
Oh,
she liked
did,
this
he
film.
He did Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and
oh yeah,
Count
yeah.
of Monte Cristo.
Uh huh.
And stuff like that, but
I
like
anyway, the world. The world was cool. Like it was grungy. It was dark. It was
yeah. It was like
very,
apocalyptic.
Yeah,
all
was,
water, no land.
Yeah.
Everyone's on boats. He had Kevin Costner had a cool catamaran.
The coolest fucking catamaran. It was really
was, like,
mechanical too.
On.
It was
yeah.
like everything was analog. He's had like he has all these cool little like contraptions on it. He's got like.
But it was a very much like he rescues. It's like Mad Max kind of like he
well,
rescues he's like a loner like a loner's got to be alone.
Well,
like.
He's a loner guy and he has gills and he would go
that's
he would dive
right.
down, which is another scientific interesting thing.
That's funny.
He would dive down, right? And then he would retrieve things from the bottom of the like from I guess relatively shallow areas.
Yeah.
He would go down, dive down, grab things from the old world, and then he would trade or pawn or not pawn, but trade or
yeah, sure.
you know, barter them away, and then that was it. And
I remember it was very, but it had that Mad Max feel as far
it
as
did
like,
have. You're
big,
right.
There
yeah.
were bigger boats and like other
little
guys
jet
on
skis
like,
and
there, were, there
yeah.
was like a there was like a gang of like. Very much like I can't remember what they're called in Mad Max.
Oh,
but
the chrome,
white
the chrome,
boys.
The guys who would like huff chrome or whatever.
Yeah,
like, right
yeah.
before
they were
went
on,
into
but
battle.
They were on, like jet skis,
the gasoline boys
stuff,
or whatever
yeah.
they were called. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And they were fighting over you know
yeah.
fuel.
It was
and
very
water
much.
And,
it was very much the
end.
It was. It was like the opposite of
Mad
Max.
Yeah,
basically.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was cool yeah. movie, but pretty like paint by the numbers as far as like stereotypes because like. Kevin Costner's got to be alone doing his thing.
Saving,
like,
saving the woman.
He reluctantly
you know,
saves a woman
yeah,
and her daughter,
yeah.
and is like, "Well, I didn't want to, but I felt like I
yeah,
had
reluctant."
To.
The reluctant
and then
hero.
He comes around by
yeah.
the end, and he's like, "Nah, I'm a good guy now."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. a reluctant hero that grew into his, you know, grew
it's,
into.
I
his
think
role.
It's worth a watch, though.
Oh
into,
no,
like,
definitely, it was a lot of fun.
Movies. But anyway, let's get some structure. We're fucking
oh, yeah, yeah.
tangenting all the hell.
Terrible.
What you got? What's a good science? What's a sci-fi movie that has terrible?
Okay, so. The one that really irritated me the first time I saw it, this one, like, there were plenty of, and I usually stick to, like, heavy, you know, like, sci-fi or, you know, stuff like Interstellar or, mm-hmm. Like, Prometheus or anything like that. I like these films, but there was one film that is one of the few space films or like, space genre sci-fi films that I watched a couple years ago, Gravity, with, was it Sandra Bullock,
Sandra Bullock and
George Clooney?
Yeah.
So this movie looks great. And, like, NASA was all... They were like, hey, they did a great job of portraying the Earth from orbit. Like, it looks great. That's exactly what it looks like. Yeah. You know, pat on the back. You know, you did a great job. But when it comes to the physics, orbital mechanics, and the physics of the movie, they take just a few too many, when you take, do you take too many liberties? And so what was interesting about it, there was a scene where the George Clooney character, which I think his name was Kowalski or something in the movie, and then you have the Sandra Bullock character.
Kowalski,
and yeah, exactly. Kaboom. So there was a scene where Sandra Bullock's character is tethered to the George Clooney character.
Yes, and he's holding, but she's being launched away because of, like, the satellite and, like, crashing into the station or whatever.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, it doesn't really matter what the scenario. The scenario basically is, like, she's at one end of the tether, he's at the other.
Yep.
They are separating, and then at some point that tether becomes taut, and it holds the tension, and then they stop, right? And so they're both, but then, like, somehow George Clooney's character has to cut the line in order for her to stay where she is, even though the momentum has already been broken by the line being taut.
Yeah, so as soon as that line, able to pull her in.
Yeah, so as soon as that line became taut, and then he if anything, it would have rebounded, and then they would have started coming back together. It would have been an elastic interaction with the line and the tether.
Right.
And so, like, that, and then, so the idea of you, it's almost as like if they played this scene like they were hanging off of a cliff, and he was dead weight, and he had to cut himself so that way she could survive.
Right.
Like, again, like in Day After Tomorrow, like that, there's a scene in there with that. But that's not what happens. If anything, they would just bounce. It would be an elastic interaction. Either the line would break and he would go spinning off into another orbit, or they would be elastic and then they would just bounce back together.
Right.
So that's like and the reason why I bring that up is because that's the whole reason why he dies.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the whole reason.
Yeah. So that was I should have stated this earlier, but
like that's the
what
crux
I wanted
of the
this
movie.
To do is that I wanted you to bring up the science, then I was going to kind of try.
I
was going to try to like rank based on whether or not like it's important to the movie or
right.
if I'm
just nitpicking.
No, yeah. But I do actually agree with you that this hurts it because gravity is set within. If you're realistic, it's supposed to be like
right,
hyper
realistic. Yeah.
And what we're capable of in our understanding of physics and how it works.
Yeah.
And then also, this is such a pivotal part of it.
Right.
That's, you know, a character's sacrifice, basically the second character in the movie.
Exactly.
Him dying in such a kind of dumb way.
Right.
That doesn't
well,
make
just any
a sense,
physically
is kind of a
is physically impractical one.
Yeah.
Like either that line would break and he'd go spinning out, or she would go spinning. I forget who was in the precarious situation, but.
Gravity bad, right?
Well, they could fix that scene, right? All they have to do to fix that scene is make it to where he was traveling a little too fast and that line couldn't accommodate for that much force. And the line would just break and then he would just go flying off. But there's no tension.
But then,
it doesn't,
well,
there's no.
If that happens, he doesn't sacrifice.
Right. Exactly. It's just accidental.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no sacrifice, which again, but I feel like if you're going to make a character sacrifice, like. You know,
you gotta just do. You gotta, there was a rewrite there where they could have made it happen.
Yeah,
sure.
It just like if they had anybody who was even mildly understand, like who understood, you know, not even orbital mechanics, just kinematics in general, like how you know, or material science, or you know, anything like that. Like they would know the difference between a plastic and elastic interaction.
Funnily enough, since we were talking about Waterworld. I actually just found on here that the whole idea in Waterworld is that, you know, because of, like, climate change or whatever, the polar ice caps melt and then the entire world gets covered in water.
But
this is really dumb because if all of the polar ice caps melt, there would be problems for sure, but the water level could only maximum raise about 200 feet worldwide.
Right, so the issue that people forget.
Cities, yeah.
So the reason why... ice cap melting is bad is not because
it's a reflection of heat from the sun.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So it's a reflection of it's about
science.
Exactly. It's the reflection of heat, but it's also the amount of freezing and refreezing and or melting and then refreezing of polar ice, and then obviously how that reflects like solar energy,
right.
And how much energy the Earth retains. So the less ice we have, the less reflectivity or less reflectiveness that we have of the Earth, and the more energy we retain. So, yeah, but what's really interesting is that people forget is that a lot of that polar ice is already in the water. Like, it's sitting in the water.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, if it melts, the water level doesn't change.
Right.
It's like it's like when you have ice in your cup of water.
The volume doesn't change.
Exactly, yeah. It's just the states change.
Right.
So the water, the only way that the water level would rise is if you had ice that was sitting on land that melted and then poured into the into the ocean.
But even so, you would need so much because right now.
Oh no, you would need it. We'd need to have comets and things from out extra, you know, extraterrestrial water that would have to land on our planet.
Because right now, it wouldn't have enough. We're in like South Metro Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
So we're only like 3.5 hours from the sea.
So
I think our altitude.
Well,
right
no,
now
we're
is
from
like
Savannah. Yeah, we're like 4 hours. I think that's probably the closest.
And it's definitely the closest body of water. And what's it? I think we're at like 800 feet above sea level or something
that's
like that.
That's a good question. I thought we were a little higher than that, but I thought we were in the like 1 to 2,000, but
above
for like
sea level.
I know for where I am in Lawrenceville.
Okay, Atlanta is 1,050 feet on average.
Oh,
okay.
Because I knew where I am in Lawrenceville, I'm a little higher.
Yeah.
Just
so
I'm
you would need
North
five times as much like ice melting as there possibly is by all the caps just to cover Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
Which isn't even that far
right,
inland.
No,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the more detrimental parts of there would be parts if there was
a big fucking deal.
No, it would be. What I'm saying is like there are parts of the United States, especially in like some southern states, you know, like Louisiana, for instance, like that are they have a lot of property, and Florida too, where they have a lot of property that is right at sea level or below sea level.
Right.
And they, you know, if sea levels rose 10 or 15 or 20 feet, that could make a huge difference for them.
The science in that is not nearly as detrimental to
for which one? Oh, water. Oh, yeah. I mean, that you make
because
no,
because
you're making
it's explainable.
Yeah.
It's believable enough.
Well, the premise is you're making that assumption that, hey, we have a bunch of water. And they don't really, I mean, I don't, because they basically never really went through the explanation of what happened to the old world. All they knew is that the old world was flooded. Like, was there an explanation given in the movie? I don't remember.
I think there might have been some opening narration. It's been a long time
since
I've seen Waterworld. But
if you make the assumption that, hey, we just have a bunch of water now, and they did end up finding some land in the movie.
Mount Everest is the summit of Mount Everest, apparently, is the only thing that's
interesting.
Out,
okay, yeah.
Which is crazy because.
Which is ridiculous because it
Mount
looked
Everest
like
is
a.
What, 20,000 feet
20,
up?
24. Yeah, 24,000, I think.
Like, to imagine that everything
it's insane,
else.
Yeah, like I said, it would be more. Because think about the volume of water, right?
Yeah.
Because as you increase the volume of water, or as you increase the sea level,
mm-hmm.
right? So that means you would have to get more and more water for every foot of sea level that you increase.
Sure.
Because your diameter would increase, right?
I wonder if you actually did that, if there was as much water as there is, like, on Earth
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden as there is in
Waterworld.
Would that affect our gravitational orbit?
So it's interesting that you were
so
So it's interesting that you bring that up because I was thinking about this. Not only would it change, I mean, the volume of water, even though it is a lot more than what we would normally have.
We'd leave the Goldilocks zone.
No. We don't have to worry. I don't think it would affect our orbit that much, especially since if we're assuming that the Earth did at some point have that much water and then it melted, it would not change the overall volume. So, we didn't gain water from some sort of extra solar
source. Yes, I would be under
source.
The assumption now that we did.
Yeah, so assuming
that
we
sense.
Had that much ice to begin with that was on land and that it melted.
No, I'm assuming that we knew water.
Oh, this is so new water.
Basically, imagine I snap my fingers and all of a sudden we're in water.
We wouldn't. So that would increase the mass of the Earth, right?
Yeah.
Which, if anything, would probably either slow our rotation. Or it would, because like that much, I don't know if it would make that much of a difference. Like, I don't think it's going to, if anything, it's going to slow our revolution.
So
the
our
movement
years would
around.
Be longer.
Yeah, so the years will be longer, and maybe the day might be a little longer.
I don't know what
so
affects
I don't know,
how fast the Earth spins
Well,
itself.
Also, think about this. Think about tides. So if we have a whole bunch more water, like say that's 10 times more water than we've ever had, than we have now, right?
Yeah.
Think about like, because remember
it
on,
has to be
but
more
think
than
about,
that.
But think about, remember in Interstellar, the one planet with, it was just water.
Oh,
and they had the giant, huge tides.
For
just rotating
reason,
around
the
planet.
Water, at least where they were in Interstellar on that
was
planet,
super
was
calm.
Super, no, it was super shallow.
Well, so I'm assuming there are probably some, well, that's another weird thing for me because he was diving down. Two areas where he could actually get to, like, old buildings and stuff. So that...
No. In Interstellar.
Oh, in Interstellar. Yeah,
They're standing on the water. It's really
They're standing
shadow.
On the... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you have a huge
and
wall
And then a huge
of,
wave. So they must have just been in a weird, like, right on a... That would make sense why there would be such huge waves if there was a big dip.
Right.
Right.
I mean, if you think about
it,
if you're going to land a ship, you want to land it in an area that's... shallow.
Yeah, sure.
I guess. Just sense. Yeah. So I mean, I can go ahead and just rationalize that away. Though I mean, I have problems with Interstellar for other reasons than
do you,
than
when
the title
was the last
forces.
Time you saw, because we've talked, Tyler and I have talked about Interstellar a bunch of times. I really like that movie a lot, except for the ending.
Before we move on to Interstellar, for Waterworld, the fact that it has 50 times more water than the Earth has ever had.
I feel like it'd be like 1,000 times.
Well, in any case, what I'm saying is, like, do you think making that assumption changes, like,
no,
the movie?
I think
you make that assumption, I think as long, like, because they don't really build, like, everything after that is fine. Really.
Yeah, exactly, because that's you're basically just setting up the movie.
Yeah.
If anything, you could make the argument that the people in that world, just like in Mad Max, don't really fully understand everything that happened.
Yeah.
Just because they seemed it's been
It was the before time.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're not
the long ago.
They've kind of lost a lot of their more sophisticated.
They lost all their oral history or all their written records. You know, they don't have
their
that
oral
anymore.
History is all they have.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, it's been long enough to where they don't really remember, like, the oral history.
Well,
isn't
they didn't
giving
write
them
anything
much.
Down. So
that's not, or it got destroyed.
That's why I'm saying it's all oral history. It's
well, it is now. I guess when I never mind. Yeah, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah. But
in that
case,
I don't think it hurts it.
From the audience perspective, I agree, because it's believable enough when you don't really understand everything that's going on. I wouldn't have ever really questioned that. I would have thought that feels like a little high, but okay, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely wouldn't have thought that it was nowhere near enough.
Yeah.
It's not that's not nearly as big of an issue because you're just kind of setting up the world and
right exactly.
Yeah. Moving on.
Yeah.
Interstellar though.
Interstellar.
When was do you fully understand the ending of Interstellar as far as like, love being the fourth dimension to transcend.
So So from what I understand, what happens is that the Matthew McConaughey character enters the black hole and okay so that right there, we can't really say what happens past the event horizon of a black hole. All we know is that once something goes past it, it doesn't come out.
I said on a previous podcast that a black hole is a infinitely dense object singularity, maybe that like
well
it,
singular
that,
well
a
singular the reason why it is a called a singularity is because it essentially rips everything into a line of atoms. That's essentially what a singularity would be.
Okay.
So, but in this case, they're using
it sucks things into it is because it's so dense, its gravitational pull is just immense, right?
Right. So, like, if you've ever seen the classic, like, presentation of how space time operates, you know, it's that people put heavy dense balls in the middle of like trampolines or fabrics, and then you can see the dip, and then you throw another little ball, throw another little ball, and it rotates, and then it falls towards the.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of that's a pretty adequate analogy. In this case, imagine instead of like a bowling ball on a bed sheet, imagine a hole in that bed sheet, or like it's almost like a boulder on the bed sheet, and then it's broken through the bed sheet, but you still have that tear,
right?
That huge tear in the bed sheet, and so basically whatever falls into it, instead of it just crashing into it, the idea is that there may be something else that happens to it. So again, in physics, like, I'm certainly not a physicist. I'm certainly not an astrophysicist. But we don't really know what happens. I mean, there are fun terms like spaghettification and different things that we understand as to what might happen from different points of view from objects that fall into singularities. But we don't really know what happens. So that's fine from that movie's perspective. If they want to say, hey, we're gonna go out on a limb here and say this is what happens when you pass an event horizon and you go into a black hole. But what we can probably say is that the Matthew McConaughey character and that ship that he was in would be ripped to shreds. I mean, it would essentially be, because what would happen is that the gravitational forces would become so great at between the front of the ship and the back of the ship that the ship would literally be ripped into a single line of atoms. And so that's kind of what we would think would happen, and that's what spaghettification is. But so if they want to take liberties as to what happens past the event horizon, that's fine.
So from what I understand of the explanation, I've been skimming this Looper article. So facts here.
Yes, can't wait.
When he gets sucked into the black hole with TARS.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. I was just talking about the black hole part. But apparently the beings that they had interacted with like when it's actually just them from the future.
Let me get there. So that's how they somehow are protected. They don't explain exactly how, but right. those beings protect them from being destroyed in the black hole and then yeah. transport them kind of instead of a black hole. It basically works more like a wormhole. They get transported to.
Well, the idea is that in the center of every black hole there is a wormhole, because essentially what you're saying is that the black hole is so dense it is literally ripping space time, and so we're opening a hole in space time and we're connecting two points in space that would be normally separated by lots of space, but we're actually connecting them.
Right.
So think about it in terms of like if you had, I'm trying to think of like a way to explain this other than like the classic, paper there's the classic example of you take a piece of paper, you fold it in half, you punch it. I think they do that in the movie. They punch a hole through the middle and that's the fastest way to get.
That works fine, fair enough. Yeah. So, but to go from there and then he goes into that, the library.
From what I understand, was a way for fifth dimensional beings or fourth, you know, because we're three dimensional beings, right? So we can perceive three dimensions, or we can perceive three dimensions or control three, and we perceive a fourth, right?
Right,
so time
right,
is
I was
our
about
fourth.
To say, yeah, yeah.
So a fifth dimensional being would be able to move through time like we move through space.
Right.
That's the idea, mm-hmm. right? And so every dimension up you go, you can traverse through the other ones below you.
Yeah, or have some.
So the idea there is that if you are interacting with a fifth dimensional being, where they don't really, when they see you, they see you at every age. So they don't really know, you know, how to interact with you. So the idea is that they created a system in which our three-dimensional beings would be able to perceive their universe.
Right.
And so that's how they were, it's kind of just a way for us to perceive their universe.
So that's all fine. That part's all good.
Again, this is
sci-fi
poetic
stuff,
liberties
fine.
This isn't really science.
Because you can't disprove any of this.
No, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Because it's supposed to be, you know, far off. Yeah. So
essentially they're saying like, hey, these beings are advanced enough to just do whatever they want. They're essentially godlike
to an extent.
Yeah.
I mean, they still, yeah.
It's the whole science is sufficiently good enough, it's magic.
Cooper basically says there towards the end that love is the key, and that his trust for he can trust his love for his daughter to guide him to exactly where he needs to be as far as like how contacting her through the bedroom.
Right.
So
this is another like idiosyncratic behavior when it comes to time travel movies again, because mm-hmm. again, this is another aspect of time travel where we're basically saying it's all a big loop. They had to, in order for them to receive the messages that they received in the past, they have to give them in the future to make the loop work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no.
So essentially what they're saying is that in order for the Cooper character, the Matthew McConaughey character, to find where in this long stream of events
mm-hmm.
where he was, he had to use love or whatever. His connection with his daughter is what led him to the exact right moments to give him, you know, to give her the message of hey, there's more, you know.
Right.
So like that, looking more into it, like the love was basically his connection with his daughter and the ability, because she ultimately saves everyone, right? I mean, she comes up with the formulas.
Up, yeah.
You know, she's the one that sees all this stuff, and so she's the one that he has to communicate with, and I think the beings that are setting all this up, I think they would have, but they don't know what the best time to give this information is, because they don't see time like we do. So they just see it, you know, all at once, whereas we can see it as individual events. And so they basically give us a way of seeing all the timelines or all the moments in time.
Right.
And then we're the ones that are better able to choose which time is, you know, the most opportune to give her this information. So
yeah.
I think that's kind of what they were going for.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not a huge fan.
I like everything all
up until that part. Yeah,
the love
yeah.
thing comes in,
yeah.
and that's how he figures it. It
Agreed,
just feels
yeah.
cheap and cheesy.
It's a bit of a cop out in my opinion. You know, because they did a really great job of, especially when they go to, I forget what that planet is that's right next to the black hole, where they're in orbit.
Is that Matt Damon's planet?
No.
Oh, that's the water one.
That's the water
super,
one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, it's like super,
whatever,
I forget, super.
40 years or something.
So, every like 1 hour that they spend on there is like 7 years.
Yeah.
Because there's
like
this crazy time dilation.
Mm-hmm.
So, that kind of stuff is theoretically possible. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It is, time dilation by itself is very much possible, and it mm-hmm. happens all the time. The human race deals with time dilation all the time. when it comes to especially GPS. So the satellites have to be constantly adjusted because they run slower than so their time actually runs slower than ours because
very,
they're moving
very,
very quickly.
Minuscule difference.
No, right, but yeah. over but for to be accurate
right,
to
right,
down
right.
to the foot level or mm-hmm. down to, you know, sub foot level or whatever, you have to always correct, you know, the times. And so what's really interesting is that we're constantly having to deal with time dilation in that. But again, that's very minuscule. This is a huge, you know, version of time dilation. And it's very much, you know, reasonable and probably and very probable within the universe.
Yeah. So I mean,
and they do a really good job of, like, you know, all the physics for, you know, docking and moving through space look really good. They look really
right.
believable. All the ships are really believable. You know, they're not like Star Wars where they look like they should be in atmosphere and they're not, like. You know, everything looks really good and behaves properly.
And feels, you know, real.
And feels
grounded.
Reasonable. Yeah, I mean, they don't feel like they're super high fantasy type ships mm-hmm. or anything, you know.
Even though a lot of the stuff they actually do in the movie is pretty, you know, I mean, they're able to travel. I can't remember. I mean, they're able to travel.
Well,
like,
so they travel really long distance. Well, they traveled to, what was it, Saturn or something? Or Jupiter? What, they traveled out because that's where the black hole was. They traveled to...
Yeah, near Saturn.
Because the beings had opened up a black hole, like, right next to, or a wormhole, right next to Saturn or something. Mm-hmm. And then, so they went there, and they basically were in hibernation, and then they woke up. That was another thing that I always find interesting for sci-fi is, like, the whole hibernation thing and, like, how we would do that. And I think in this movie, they did a pretty cool job of, like, making it look interesting. Similar to, like, kind of like Alien or like Prometheus or any of these other, like,
are you talking about the crewmates?
Yeah, they had to be putting into hibernation
and hope that someone will eventually.
Well, not just that, but, like, when they were traveling, they had to be in hibernation for a long time because otherwise they'd be going through consumables. They'd be, you know,
they'd be going through
oxygen and food and water and yada, yada. And it's just not sustainable. I mean, they'd be out there for years through interplanetary travel.
Right.
You know, because we just can't get anywhere very fast. So they did a really good job, and there was even that scene where they do the docking scene where he has to match rotation, and it's like we have the station losing orbit, and it's spinning out of control, and then he has to match the orbit and the spin, and it's a great, like, you know, ballet of orbital mechanics, and they do a really good job with that.
Hans Zimmer score in this movie in general is very. Grandiose,
yeah.
And but that scene in particular, it sticks.
Oh,
in my
it's
head.
Great. Yeah, it's very Holt, isn't it? Like, it's very like. Are you familiar with, like, this the planet? Like, you know, there's Holt is a composer. I don't remember what time period. It was a long time ago. But he did the planets.
He did the planets.
He did pieces of music that represented each planet.
Oh, I've never heard of this.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I forget what the whole, like, we call it the album. I forget what that one's
Holst?
Called.
Gustav Theodor Holst.
Yeah. I mean, it's pronounced Holt. I don't think you pronounce the S, but yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It was just called the planets, like, it's or the.
Yeah. 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 Yep. Gustav.
But it has a very similar kind of epic feel to that.
Yeah, it's very full sounding.
Yeah. Very grandiose. Lots of gravity, if you will.
A lot of organ.
Yeah, it's really good. I think most people have probably heard the one, I think it's Jupiter. I think everybody's heard that one, pretty much.
I'd probably recognize it.
If you, yeah, it's used a lot in, like, general, like, Prince... commercials and movies and use it because it's not, you know, it's free to use and there's no, like, you don't have to pay for it.
Does Interstellar have, because we find out by the end of Interstellar that the fourth, fifth dimensional beings are just us from the future.
Right.
And that's why, and the planet's dying and that's why they create the wormhole to narrow Saturn in order to kind of reach out and try to get us to, you know, fix our own self. But doesn't that create the whole paradox where if we needed help from fifth dimensional beings who are ourselves. We need help from ourselves from the future to come back and fix the past in order to get to that future.
Yeah.
How do they ever get to that future?
Right.
In the first
place? This is another.
So
you know,
does this have the grandfather paradox?
Well, here's the problem. Well, yeah, it does essentially, right? Because if you're talking about, like, the Back to the Future type grandfather paradox where, like, you have to go back in time to make sure that you don't erase yourself from the timeline kind of thing, right? But yeah, unfortunately,
it's a little different than Back to the Future. Because
right, but it's the same type of principle.
His own problem in the
right.
past for the future.
Yeah,
so yeah.
But it's essentially but the same thing where somehow in their time stream, they're going back in time in their own time stream, changing something, and then it is affecting their same future.
Right. Opposed to creating a new
as opposed to creating
reality.
An entirely new right. So you can't do that. Yeah. Obviously. So there's we have no proof in science that says that, hey, you can go back in time, especially in your own time stream.
Right.
What we do know is that you can go forward in time in your own time stream with no problems. That works perfectly.
Right.
And we even know that if you were possible to go back in time, you would never go back in time in your own time stream. It would always be a different timeline, right? So it's basically like you invading another universe, essentially, is what would be happening.
Right.
But we also have some problems with that because now we're creating matter, essentially, right? So if we had time travelers, or in this case, universe travelers, like trans-universal travelers, you know, or because it wouldn't be trans-dimensional and it wouldn't be interplanetary or whatever. It would just be you're going from one universe to another universe.
Right.
And if you popped out into another universe where they were still in the Industrial Revolution, you know, then essentially you're new matter from another universe be entering this other universe. So without getting too, you know, bogged down in the weeds, like, It has some problems. Like, you would never be able to go back into your own past, but you have there's no problem moving forward in time accelerated, but you can never move backwards in time,
right,
as far as we're aware, at least in our own time stream.
Because I guess matter, you know, that's the whole part of it, is that matter is neither created nor destroyed, so adding new matter...
Exactly. So if you had a universe where... Now, okay, so there is a way to get around that in some ways. Mm-hmm. So if you think about black holes, if you think about a universe where black holes exist...
Yeah.
You also have to take into account that there are probably other universes where the reverse exists, so a white hole, something that's spewing out matter. So essentially, if you think about it in terms of matter can neither be created or destroyed, maybe instead of saying that within a universe that's true, we would say within the multiverse that's true. So for instance, like, matter can be transferred from one universe to another,
right?
But we're never really truly destroying it. It's just being displaced. Like, it's moving from one room to another room. And we just can't move. We can't move between the rooms, but matter can in
right.
general. So there would you could make that argument, but yeah. In this case, what I think what's happening is that we're getting into the whole timeline and time travel paradoxes, where, you know, it's the like. And I'm not even going to get into movies like Looper or Memento or I got Memento's probably fine because that's just memory loss, but. Like, there are other time, or what is it? Not Memento. What's the one? There's one where, like, they get in a box and then they go back in time.
Get in a box?
Yeah, it's like Memento, but I can't remember what the movie is called. Anyways, any time travel movie, it really gets terrible really fast.
Yeah, well, Looper for sure. Fucking Ryan Johnson.
Yeah, Looper, especially there's that scene where, like, he damages his younger self, and then you see the damage appear on the older self.
Yeah, straight up.
That
straight
is
up
ridiculous.
Back to the Future.
Oh,
right,
that's
there.
Yeah, that's just garbage. Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, so the thing with Interstellar, its grandfather paradox and the love aspect,
yeah.
I do think that hurts the film, even though I still like that movie a lot.
I think the grandfather paradox is more damning, and it makes very little sense, because if you think about a fifth dimensional being, which is somehow us, mm-hmm. right? We've evolved.
Right.
The idea that you'd have the power to send messages back in time and make wormholes,
have
but not save your own
yeah,
planet.
Exactly. Have this incredibly vague and kind of outside the situation influence. That they do in the movie, opposed to just, and they have all this power, but they do it in such like a roundabout. They'll figure it out. Hopefully, you know what I mean, it's like if you're not gonna if you're not gonna try that hard, why do it at all?
Yeah, exactly. It's like the whole Terminator thing, right? It's like they send people back in time to fix the past, so that the future is like stays the way it is, or changes for the betterment.
Well, in Terminator, they send they send, you know, one person back to help, and then Skynet sends somebody else to stop them.
Yeah. But you're still getting into that thing where, like, oh, and then they send a third guy and a fourth guy to hunt down the third guy, and then a fifth. And like, why? Like, my thing is,
I always thought is Skynet. Why did they only ever send one guy?
Right. Yeah. Did they only have? Yeah. Did they just what was Frank out that day and they couldn't send him?
Exactly.
Like, you know, what
it's
was
like
the deal there? Yeah.
Robotic conscious that.
Yeah. They only had enough energy
to
send. I mean, it's possible, I guess, to get around that. Like, you could say, oh, we only had enough energy to send one, because it would be a tremendous amount of energy, right? To send, idea is that to send anybody through any kind of portal or wormhole, right, or to create a wormhole would be exceedingly energy consuming or taxing.
But so Interstellar, I think the main issue narratively is that the movie is, you know, obviously realistic and grounded more so than most.
It does a great
sci-fi
job on the micro scale. The micro scale does a great job.
Yeah. And it's treating its audience, you know, with respect throughout the most of it by kind of showing that, you know, having realistic ways of, or scientific ways of explaining things opposed to, you know, just very much more movie trope kind of stuff.
It's not a romantic problem like Gravity.
Yeah, where opposed to, you know, usually films kind of resolve themselves by having a hero, you know,
overcome something
through sheer force of will, or you know, whatever. No. This has much more logical explanations up until the end, where it kind of does just go right back into that. Due to my immense love for X character, I have now fixed the world, which just feels so out of place and just really pulls you out.
Yeah.
So it unfortunately does affect it. Interstellar probably, if they had rewrote the ending, to just be just more along the lines of the rest of the movie, it'd probably be my favorite Christopher Nolan movie.
Agreed. I mean, I think, I think you're right. I mean, that would be really good. I think there are certainly ways that they could have fixed it, to make it a little bit more reasonable and make the, like, it would have been cool if there had been a way for them to interact with that same library scene, but maybe not with the same romanticism and
I think you can even keep the library scene if you kind of
I just want to change how they got there, or the reason why they're there.
They do. I wish they could have had a little bit more involvement of the US characters, since they're it's such a pivotal part of how the plot resolves.
Yeah.
Having the US, that they feel a little deus ex machina, because they're not explained at all, and so they just kind of come in and save everything as far as all the tools for the character to save himself, and we have really no full explanation of what. I mean, we have they're us from the future, and it's like, well, okay, but give
we have
me
no
a little
reason.
Bit
more we have no reason to trust that that's the truth. Like, there's no reason for us to be like, well, how do we know that that's the case?
Yeah, and we have nothing else to grab onto.
And we're really
we're
throwing a lot of resources and manpower at something that we don't, and we have no no guarantee of payoff. Is what I'm guessing.
Well, that's fine, because I mean,
from their perspective,
in the movie's perspective, they're Hail Marying from the
beginning. I mean, I get that.
They've basically given up hope, but it's just like, well, we could try it, and they're like, well, what would we lose by trying? Yeah. You know what I mean? So
Interstellar, I mean, a great up until the black holes or the wormhole scenes. Really, any wormhole scene other than that, they did a great job with. Like, it works really well. I did want to bring up really quickly The Martian. Which I think I've mentioned in previous, I don't know if I've mentioned in previous podcasts, but you and I have talked about this, and it's been talked about as one of the most scientifically accurate or portrayals of space
except
travel.
Except for one thing.
Except for, well, a few things.
Well,
I mean,
there's one big thing, which is the storm on Mars.
Right. So, as we all know, there was a huge storm in the book and in the movie. Mm-hmm. Mark Watney was taken out by an antenna array that had broken loose during a storm. A sandstorm on Mars,
which apparently had like crazy fast winds.
Right,
and
so crazy
kind of
fast
stuff.
Winds and whatever, and then that antenna array broke off, and then it skewered him in his computer
he got, like,
box.
Blown off. He was like blown away.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they left him.
Right. So the big issue with that, obviously, and the guy and Andy Weir, the writer,
the author
has basically he was like, look, I had no other way of making the him being left behind believable. So he basically kind of just...
He acknowledges that the science doesn't work.
Right.
And that because the whole point, correct me if I'm wrong, is that Mars's atmosphere is so thin and so non-existent that it doesn't act as a medium enough for storm winds to affect...
Well, essentially, it's one. It's less than 1% of the density of Earth atmosphere.
Right.
So if you think about like what wind actually is, it's just... atoms in the air, the oxygen, the nitrogen, you know, everything that's in the air, it's moving very quickly and it's hitting something, and that force is what is causing causing something to move.
Right.
If it's the same thing as me pushing you with 100% of my force and then pushing you with 1%.
Right.
There's going to be a huge difference.
Mm.
So if you had winds, you know, there's nothing pushing. Instead of hitting you with 1,000 beach balls at once, mm-hmm. I'm hitting you with one. And so it's just because it's not dense. There's right. there's not enough.
The,
mu-
the
there's not enough.
Are much more spread apart opposed to close together.
Well, there's just not as many. So yeah, they're spread out. Okay, yeah, so they're spread out. And so that part doesn't. Yeah. So that
so
part is ridiculous.
Like
there are storms on Mars.
Experience how we would experience 50 mile an hour winds during like a hurricane here.
Right. It wouldn't exist.
You would have to have 500 mile an hour or like 5,000 mile an hour winds
yeah,
on Mars
they,
to
yeah,
get the equivalent.
Because right, because
feeling.
Yeah, they would because essentially instead of the amount of matter that's moving in an Earth storm, you would need to offset that with the speed at which those molecules and those atoms
right.
are moving. So, because then you'd get the same force,
right?
Right.
And so, in the movie, there's no real way for the antenna to be
because there's just not enough,
or
yeah.
for him to have been blown away
no,
by a storm
no.
on Mars.
I mean, there are
happen.
Storms on Mars, but think about it. And they do get the later in the book. They because I think in the book they go way more into this. Mm-hmm. And there are sandstorms on Mars, and they get that part right because it would just get a little bit more hazy.
Yeah.
Right, and they probably exaggerate that a little bit
in the
book.
Movie. It's like completely
right.
See
you can't even
anything.
See right.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah. So they get that part more right. I should
Would
say.
Would sand moving quickly make a?
Unfortunately, the sand moving, especially like on Earth, the reason why it's moving is because the air is pushing
okay.
it up,
that's
and it's
so
and it's
it really
being caught up.
It really
again,
be
we don't have enough
fast.
Medium,
yeah.
as you put it,
yeah.
enough wind or enough mass in the air to actually pick anything up.
Right.
So if anything, you'd get those fine dust particles.
That's why
that would be brought up, like you know rust dust and
right.
you know stuff like that. That would be maybe thrown up in the air, and that's why it would get a little hazy. And that's why in the movie he has problems, you know, recharging his solar arrays or recharging his batteries using the solar arrays, and you know he's constantly having to dust those off or whatever.
Right.
So that part might be a little bit more accurate. And there certainly were aspects of that movie that were accurate. It turns in like. There was an episode. There was a scene where he has an explosive decompression part where
yep.
you know the seals on the hatch get you know used and constantly from the pressurization and depressurization they wear and they fatigue and then finally they give way and so all that air that was inside the inside the hab and inside the airlock immediately escapes as if there's no atmosphere and as if he's
right.
in the middle of space and so that part is that is tremendously accurate. And so, but then there's another couple scenes, I should say, where he's fertilizing, Martian dirt. He's mixing Martian dirt with, I think, a little bit of dirt that they had brought for
mm-hmm.
experiments. And then he's mixing that in with his own, like his own human fertilizer,
yep.
being like his excrement that he's adding
yes,
to
got
the,
that.
Yeah. And so that part would be really difficult to believe as well because Martian soil doesn't have anything for the bacteria and whatever that soil need that the plants need from the soil. It wouldn't have any of the nutrients. So he'd have to supplement the soil with a bunch of other nutrients as well. So which he wouldn't have. He wouldn't be able to double his soil. Because, I mean, and even in the book and the movie, he does talk about, oh, the bacteria is growing and yada, yada. And
right.
But unfortunately, I don't know if they address this a lot in the in the scientific talks about the Martian, but I don't think that you'd be able to get the bacteria that you need just from your own feces. I don't think you'd be able to do that. And so, I mean, if you're a botanist out there and you want to correct me on that, please. But I don't think there's simply
yeah.
that you wouldn't be able to make that soil rich enough
right.
to grow enough calories.
I certainly haven't heard that particular inaccuracy about the movie. It could exist, but if I remember, because
they've been trying to make Martian soil into regular soil for like simulating it.
Yeah.
You know, they take what they think is Martian soil compositions and then they try to enhance it and enrich it in some way to make it growable or farmable. And so it's really difficult because there's just simply nothing, you know, it's so barren.
Right.
And there's just not a lot of it. You know, it's a planet that's been, you know, windswept for and just barren for so long. And it's just been rusting away. So there's not a lot there.
So with the Martian, with the main instance being unfortunately, this part of the science not working. It's in this weird middle ground where that movie does such a good job as far as being accurate, and this is its one big
downfall.
Downfall, and you want to forgive it, right? Because
yeah.
it's not crazy, but it is the inciting incident that begins the plot.
Right.
And so when you
yeah.
when you have a contrived inciting
beginning,
incident,
yeah.
that sets off your whole plot line. That it does kind of hurt it a bit. Now, is it enough? It's not going to hurt, you know, general audiences for the most part, because especially when you're going into the first time, like, I had no idea when I watched this Mars storms couldn't have
And to be fair,
I hadn't
thought about it either. It took me a little while, and I had, you know, after reading the book and seeing the movie, I still you know, didn't quite realize why that was an issue until I had, like, read about it.
Right. So it's one of these things where I think generally I would give it a pass just because it's believable enough. It's not trying to. It's just in this weird area.
Most audiences, I think, are not going to realize.
For sure, yeah.
That difference, and they do a good job of kind of explaining later on, you know, what the limitations of the Martian landscape are. And so, you know, and they do a really good job with everything else. You know, they do a great job with, you know, all the...
I will say, ignorance of the audience isn't an excuse for the movie, though.
No, like, it's not. But they do... I will say that if... What I'm saying is, like, they do such a good job with, like, explaining, you know, how does he make water? Or how does he get the component, the ingredients for water? You know, how he gets them? How is he using that radioactive device?
Sure, yeah,
device?
All that's great.
They do a great job with everything else. And so I'm okay with...
But this one part, in particular, I mean, you know, since it's such an important part of the movie... I will say that, it should be kind of counted against it.
Definitely.
Objectively. Unfortunately, just because, of the general nature of the movie trying to be as realistic as it is and the unfortunate just complete absurdity of how that would actually go down in general. But, you know, if I'm an audience member and if I've only ever seen guns in movies, I might expect in real life that a shotgun, if fired at a guy, should blow him through a door. You know what I mean? From old, you know, Walker, Texas Ranger episodes.
Right, yeah. The idea that you shoot a gun and then it blows the guy back or something
like that.
But
that doesn't, and obviously that can happen, but that doesn't excuse the movie or movies in general from continuing to do that for effect just because...
We expect it. We expect it. We're okay with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though in real life that is not at all what would happen.
Sure. Yeah.
If you shot a weapon and it blew the guy away, it would also blow you away.
Yeah.
The same amount. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I see what you're saying. But I wanted to say there was to move past like the hard physics and whatnot of like an Interstellar or The Martian. There are plenty of movies that do like biochemical or anatomical have. Problems or just biochemistry in general.
Okay.
They mess a lot of that up. So any movie that has like a viral illness or a bacteria that's plaguing
everyone. Talking about zombie movies.
Well, not just, I mean, look, I mean, there are, I think the best zombie movie, or not even movie, the best zombie concept is probably The Last of Us.
Right. Video game The Last of Us, which has a fungal.
Yeah, which there is an actual fungus that invades and infects
like
ants and caterpillars and whatnot, and it does overrun the neurological systems of these animals.
It basically gets in their little brain, has them climb up something high, and then explodes to spread spores.
Yeah, or even more crazy is that it basically does away with the inhibition of that particular creature.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it makes it risk. It tends to be more risky, or like so. For instance, like because the fungus wants to spread.
It's not worried about
the host. Yeah, so it doesn't. Yeah, it wants it to get up high, or if it wants it to be, you know, it wants it to interact with predators on a more regular basis. Mm-hmm. Like it basically de-inhibits.
I mean, actually, for a fungus, for a spore, I should say, it's actually good to be eaten, right? Because
you're spreading yourself through feces,
and then you're going to have a perfect place to then culture.
Right,
to,
exactly. Yeah. So I mean, there are problems with the Last of Us type biology in that, first of all, that fungus that exists does not invade, higher level cognizant organisms. You know, it's very basic stuff, you know, insects mostly.
And so
we don't have to worry about it affecting humans per se.
I mean, for a fungus to spread, I don't know how bites would be.
Bites wouldn't normally, unless the bite was carrying the spores of
still
of
seems
the,
like a very messy.
Which is possible. I mean, there are plenty of like parasites that will release, partial fragments of themselves into, you know, meats or whatever. And then when you eat the meat, you eat the fragment and then all of a sudden you're infected.
Right,
can happen.
Sure. But I mean, like, you know, with normally how we understand fungi and mm-hmm. and also trying to go through human anatomy. I don't know how they would get to the point where they're like, what, just sitting on teeth waiting for a bite or something like that.
Well, I think in this case probably what would be more likely would be that, because the whole point of the fungus is that mm-hmm. it invades the organism. It causes the organism to essentially go insane, climb up to a large area, and then the fungus takes over even more, and then there's an explosive release of spores as the highest point, right? Mm-hmm. So it increases the area of which the spores can be spread. So I think a more likely scenario for something like a Last of Us would be, instead of bites or physical contact in that way, you'd probably be more likely to have
get up on skyscrapers and
then explode. Yeah, essentially. Yeah, and so those spores would then just be something that you would inhale or consume.
In the game, the older, more decomposed.
Well, they're not even decomposed. It's more like they're almost like they're being converted from one type of.
Yeah, the older the zombies are, the more fungal they are,
right.
The more dangerous they
which
are.
Actually which makes more sense than, say, like a typical virus that kills the zombie and then somehow that reanimated corpse becomes dangerous.
Sure, I just I struggle to see how it would make, it would not only infect the host and have all these other abilities over there, but also be able to grow them in size, have their skin become tougher, more
rigid. We see that in the fungus that exists. We mm-hmm. see that once the caterpillar, the ant or whatever becomes fully infected, I mean, the fungus will grow out of the top of the head of it. It'll essentially change its... It doesn't change its anatomy so much as it changes... It basically, disrupts the anatomy. And and especially when they get up high, it'll kind of encase them. And then it'll kill off and use it as a food source. So obviously it would need a lot of evolution. It would need a lot of changing.
Right.
But it is way more reasonable to believe that you have something that is invading a host, causing the host to become... changing its psychology, changing its neurochemistry enough to make it less, to make, you know, to further the fungus's, goal of spreading. Mm-hmm. And it would, but keeping the host alive as long as possible to reach that goal. Because whenever you have something like a viral or bacterial, vector for a zombie outbreak, we always, especially for something like World War Z, right, where you have hugely communicable disease,
right,
that spreads ridiculously fast, has a 100% mortality rate, essentially, right, mm-hmm. and that these reanimated corpses are, the whole reanimating corpse, like, they have to stay alive to move.
Right.
We can't have dead things moving. I mean, they can for a very short while. As soon as you exhaust all of your energy that you're stored within the cells and you're not replenishing that energy through, circulation, there's nothing to use. That's why you can, if you've ever done this experiment, you can electrify, frog legs and stuff or whatever, mm-hmm. and they move, but that's because they're dead, but they still have a little bit of energy stored in those cells, and essentially that current is allowing the muscles to
release.
It's getting the signal to release the calcium and to trigger that cascade.
Retraction or contraction or whatever.
Well,
whatever the muscles.
Right, the movement of myosin and actin to move across each other. Right.
I will. So. The one thing I remember from World War Z specifically was that the way they ended up beating it was that
they infected themselves
because the zombies would ignore already infected. They somehow knew.
Yeah, so like cancer
infected,
patients wouldn't
knew,
be affected,
like,
or something.
Very instinctively, like there would be in like yeah, basically anyone who was already very like
would be giving
ill,
off a smell,
you know what I mean?
Or something that they
something
could immediately
where they instantly knew. You'd see like hordes of them actively avoiding,
like,
and not even trying to hurt.
Yeah, like water
like
around
a
rock.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which I was like, maybe they could stay away generally, just how like an animal would
viruses
try not to eat another sick animal, but not to this extent that they show.
Yeah. In reality,
virus,
viruses
don't
normally. They don't care. They're opportunity. It's not going to matter how many comorbidities you have.
Especially since if you're already killing off the host.
If you have cancer, and you get pneumonia, the pneumonia is not going to be. I'm in a cancer patient. I don't want that.
This guy's
going to
die before I get him.
Yeah, that's a bad patient. Or that's a bad host. No, it doesn't care about that. So the idea that it would only go for completely healthy hosts.
The fungal wouldn't even.
No,
care
the fungal
about
no,
that
wouldn't
that
care. As long as you're mobile, it wouldn't even care about that. It's all, there's no.
It's all just about spreading.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there's no consciousness to
because
it.
Because there's no loss on their end as far as, like, they don't have to be selective.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just infecting.
Yeah. There would be no reason to be selective. I mean, there are pathogens that are selective for certain, and by selective, I meaning that they have certain, like, so for instance.
They have, like, parameters that you have to meet in order
to. Well, they
to
have
be infected.
Ideal hosts, if that makes sense. So, for instance, like, there are plenty of pathogens that are supposed to be for pigs or cattle or whatever, but because we're in the same sphere as those animals, we end up collateral.
So
we're
get,
collateral
yeah, okay.
damage. And so we're not the ideal host, but they'll still infect us.
Like a mad cow disease.
Well,
I think, I don't know.
That no, because that's not quite the same, but that's the, anyways, but like, it'd be more like parasites and stuff that we just end up being in the same, sphere as, and that they spread because we're in close contact with them. We also would contract those.
But humans, okay. Yeah, that's why I thought, because people can't get mad cow disease, but in rare cases, they can get a human form of mad cow disease called blah, 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 blah.
Is it a prion disease?
What's that?
I think it's a prion disease.
A prion disease.
Or prion, if you want to. It depends on how you want to say it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, yep.
Yeah,
so infectious proteins. Prions,
yeah, it's
yeah.
A, it's an they're
that's
a
just theory though. They don't actually really know.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean the idea is that it's malformed proteins that basically that you ingest, and then those proteins are basically like they go to other proteins and they force them to confirm to change conformation to their shape, and so it's essentially it's almost like a cancer growth. You're taking healthy cells and they're being reprogrammed into cancer cells.
I definitely think that. This a lot of the kind of some of the zombie stuff, especially in World War Z, is pretty egregious as far as hurting.
No, I mean I think
the
they
overall.
Were just going. Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, but they did a great job of making the zombies truly scary and like you know.
Oh,
they
the
made
movie
it. They
in
did
general
a good job.
About the big mob side. I mean,
yeah.
I guess World War Z is not up there as far as favorite zombie movies. It was really more of like the spectacle of like, oh, look at 10,000 of them trying to climb over the wall in Jerusalem
or
something like that.
It was a good look.
I definitely didn't get like the fear kind of factors type
but
stuff.
But do you think, from a movie aspect, just to bring this to your sphere, do you think a movie that had a more reasonable or more realistic way of making a zombie-esque or zombie-like pathogen where, you know, something like a Last of Us or you know, something like that where it's a little bit more believable or, you know, something. Do you think that'd be a better, do you like that as a, because I know that you and I enjoy The Last of Us.
Well,
but
there are other
motifs and other reasons why we like it. But do you think that kind
of
explanation
of
for a pathogen or a zombie
I
outbreak is more, you like
it,
that?
I like it in The Last of Us because it's different. You're kind of exploring a new avenue. And the fact that it's, you know, a little bit more accurate is just
or reasonable.
Nice little,
I mean,
reasonably accurate is a little bit of a nice bonus to kind of go along with it more.
Because then it makes it even more scary, in my opinion, right? Because then you're like, oh, this could actually...
I guess so.
Biologically, this is more reasonable to
occur. That's never been
a
thing for me as far as the helping of the
I guess, as long
fear.
As your suspension of disbelief is achieved,
because that's
then you're
already,
fine.
Yeah.
Because,
but I do like it when, you know, these kind of things try to broach more realistic, like in the virus in, we talked about it in Planet of the Apes. The the fact that comes from an attempted treatment for Alzheimer's, I think really helps, especially the first movie.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it, it certainly gives you that emotional aspect to the science, right? So
well,
you're like, we're trying
that,
to treat
also,
this
it also
really
ties
debilitating
it into reality from a layman's perspective that makes sense, right? A degenerative
brain disease
and you're trying to combat that, creating a regenerative brain disease, technically, feels, from a layman's
perspective, they're not
feels
using
like the right thing to do.
The virus, as far as I'm aware of how the science of Planet of the Apes works, the virus was being used as a vector, or it was being used as a way to transmit information to the brain. Right.
Yeah, but what they ended up creating ended up
was
actually
it,
literally
right,
generating
which,
human
which
brains.
Was another issue that
I
had with the
why.
Movie because if you're going to use a virus to transmit information, you wouldn't have the pathogenic part of the virus still in the virus. You'd get rid of that. You'd put your own information in there. You see what I'm saying? Like that's like me again. That's like me, you know, getting into, you know, like I take a I don't know how to give this an example. It's like so I have to use a car to get into a parking garage, right? But if there is a bomb in the car and the only, like, I wouldn't, I'd take the bomb out, Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, and I'd put more information.
Well,
like,
okay, they used a virus, but they didn't know.
You wouldn't
know
take the dangerous part of the virus. You wouldn't leave the dangerous part of the virus
thing,
in
that's
there.
That's not how they describe it in the movie anyway.
No.
It's not like they're taking a pre-existing dangerous virus. And then they're attaching what they
want
it
would,
to
that
it.
That would be really smart if they did, because if it was really dangerous and it was really communicable, then we know it's going where we want, and we know it's going there with it's going there. You know, it's binding quickly.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's getting
but
where we
my
want.
My point is that they accidentally created a
right.
new one.
Yeah.
Which they didn't understand. They didn't. It had viral pathology as far as its transmission, but their original human trials were showing that it was helping people in general.
Right.
And then when it got out, they realized later that it was actually not helping people.
Well,
it was generating.
So I thought
it accelerated the Alzheimer's process in the end.
I thought the idea was that the whole point of what was happening with the other treatments was that we have a breakdown of cerebral, you know, material cells in the brain, and then we give a virus, we use a virus as a vector to regenerate or to send information to those areas so that we can regenerate those cells. Now, the science behind that is clearly fictional.
Yeah, sure.
But if we assume that that is what's happening, mm-hmm. and then we say, okay, so the reason why that failed is because the body created antibodies, which were fighting the virus, which we no longer were able, without that vector, we're no longer able to get the therapeutic aspect of that thing, of that
but
treatment
again,
to the brain.
That's not really how it worked. You're kind of from what I understand from what you're saying, it's almost like you're saying we attached it to the common flu and then everyone died from common flu.
No. What I'm saying is that then what happened was then they made a more potent, they used a more potent virus, right? They made a more potent thing because then we wouldn't have the antibodies for it, right? So we use a more potent virus, which doesn't make sense really, because you can't have a more potent virus. It's like antibiotics. It's not about potency. It's about specificity or selectivity. And so we're essentially, you know, creating a more deadly virus, something that's more communicable, and so that we don't have the antibodies for that. And then we're using that instead. And it was that there was the usage of the more dangerous virus that caused the increased problems. And I don't know if it was like the increased antibodies that we then created for that super virus that then, you know, were also attacking the neuronal cells, or that was causing the further degeneration of the brain. So like that, the
it
whole biochemistry
the
of it was
treatment,
wasn't
from what I understand, and I can't really go into the nitty gritty, but it was that the original treatment wasn't what it was originally. Somehow,
right, because it broke. Eventually, you created antibodies that
to the virus created something opposed to just because originally when he had it in the straight up injection form, it did help his father.
Right, but it was when he but then in the movie they said he started developing antibodies for it, and that was the part. And then as soon as you have antibodies for the virus can no longer go where it needs to go.
Right, but that was from what I understand before it was actually attached virally.
Oh.
This was just a straight up. Because they did the viral part of it to help it spread. Again, we're kind of talking.
Yeah, this is the biochemical.
Details.
But what I'm saying is like that. So those kind of biochemical like reactions and how viruses are moving, and using them as vectors. That part is true. Like we do use, you know, bacteria especially, and we reprogram them essentially to do the things that we want to do. And we probably use viruses to some extent. Now, I've never been in a virology lab or used anything like that, but that part is probably reasonable. Now, obviously, how you're going to cause those cells to reprogram, or you know, if you're injecting, you know, certain types of either RNA or DNA or into those cells, and then you're using the virus to basically hijack that cell and rebuild the cell. You know, maybe that's what's happening. I'm not sure, but.
Because we got on for a long time. We've talked lots about the Planet of the Apes series. One thing I did want to talk about that's a little bit less science based, and this is more of just kind of a weird thing. You'll see where I'm going.
Yeah.
You remember Netflix's movie Bright?
Yeah, so that's the one where it's like it's like Lord of the Rings mixed with modern day, basically.
Yes, yeah. It's basically Training Day the movie, but instead one guy's an orc.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So the whole premise of Bright, as far as its world, is that basically the literal story of the Lord of the Rings happened like 2,000 years ago, and they have somehow gone from that.
They coexisted
and
the whole time.
They've still gone down the normal human progression.
So we had Orc World War II, and we
had like the combined Industrial Revolution of every like all these races together, and then we had the we had a similar enough history where we still end up in largely the same thing. Cities are the same, cops are the same, guns are the same, cars are the same, except there are centaur people.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so the idea that somehow
that changed our landscape,
our inception, and all these different races also with literal physical, you know, not
anatomical
just how race how we know them,
yeah.
the actual anatomical, I mean, there's little fairy people, and there are orcs which are bigger and stronger, and all this kind of stuff has led to largely no real difference in our coming around is insane to me.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I
also that's not even talking about the fact that magic exists.
Right. Yeah.
So
not only exists but is like used on a semi-regular basis.
It's rare by the time they're doing it. Like
I guess
those wands showing up.
That was a rare thing, I guess.
That's like the equivalent of like a terroristic act.
Or like a tiny dirty bomb or something. Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like common. They're not using it to get to work.
Yeah.
But it's still there and it has been used. So the idea that you'd still
the idea that we have a orc or that we have a multiple species, you know, Lord of the Rings type species or creature assortment and that has changed the trajectory of mankind 0%.
So
is difficult to believe.
It's funny because like Bright is one of these movies where like it's totally critically panned and then but people liked it fairly.
Well, I mean, it does.
Well.
It does have
and
like
I
a good. It has a cool
thing.
Look. Like I like the, you know, I like the way that they. I do like one aspect of that movie is that they make the idea of orcs and these other creatures, you know, being a part of the society, and obviously being a minority. You know, I like that they don't really address it. You know, I like that you're just kind of thrown in the world and then you just have to expect.
That's what the whole movie's about.
No,
I don't know what you mean by they don't address it.
But I like that.
The whole time is constantly going, that fucking orc over there or these fucking orcs.
Yeah,
like, basically, the whole movie is just it's a parallel for race.
Yeah.
So
I get it. But
so
what I'm saying is I like that medium that they that genre. They took that, like, they took the fairy tale or
they took the
Lord
fantasy,
of the Rings or fantasy.
Genre to talk
I like
about race.
I like that. No, not the message so much. I just like the look of it. Like I like the
like
way
the
that
literally how it looks.
Yeah, I like the way that they threw you in that the I mean obviously it doesn't make sense because it would have changed the trajectory of mankind for sure. But I liked the way that they I guess it was just the aesthetics, I guess, is what I'm saying. I liked the way that looked.
I just found it incredibly distracting that it's just so odd that nothing's different out of this whole system. And that everything is so similar except for, you know, a few tiny little details and obviously all the fantasy shit that's been injected in. It just seemed a little bit too out there for me and a little too in your face. Honestly, a little... I don't know, because... They very clearly, and this is going to get a little touchy here, but in the movie, they very clearly, because like all the orcs are in kind of like, they're in gangs and stuff like that. And
sure.
It's, all
it's
like
their
kind
own
of stuff.
Culture,
so it's,
yeah.
It's kind of this weird, very obvious race comparison. And it's like, why did you kind of make black people into orcs? It's just, there's a lot of weird stuff that they're doing in this movie that I'm like, these are odd choices. And they kind of make like... You know, rich, wealthy people into like elves. I don't know. It's a strange thing that it's just.
I get it. Yeah. I mean, I was trying to. Yeah. I mean, I think I've only seen this one time.
And I get why people like it, because I mean it's, you know, it's actually it's kind of like it's you know, if you don't, you're not trying to go into it with
it's
a whole
fun
bunch
to see
of
Will
thought.
Smith. That's for
they're,
sure.
Yeah, they kind of have a fun enough little dynamic, Will Smith and Joel Edgerton, as far as like back and forth, and it's the problem is it's basically just for their relationship is pretty much just Training
Day. Yeah, no,
opportunistic, like you know, of seasoned pessimistic cop versus new
rookie, and you know, peppy guy, you know, who
rookie optimistic
he's not, you know, he doesn't know the horrors of what he's in yet. I was gonna ask you, with Bright, do you think it would have been a better story, or not story, but do you think it would have been way more believable for you, or at least you would have been able to suspend your disbelief a little bit, had instead of them coexisting for thousands of years and nothing changing, if all of a sudden, like a tear in the fabric of reality had opened, and then all of a sudden, you know, all of these different creatures were able to pass in between. Like, if they had done a more recent injection of these species and character and creatures.
You know, if you do that story, it feels like it's so hard not to just have that be the focus of it, right? Because how characters are
got there would be a more interesting story.
The focus of the story.
Well, it would be a more interesting story as to how they got there,
feel,
as opposed to a buddy cop movie.
Not
or
even how they got there, but how they're dealing with that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if you have that crazy injection,
that's just another District 9. I guess is what that becomes.
Well,
yeah.
Kind of, but I'm saying you're injecting fantasy characters into our modern world to the idea that they would just go, well, let them be cops, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That would be strange, right?
But, I mean, I think that would be... I get it. Yeah, you're right.
Because imagine if orcs and elves and all these different races just suddenly appeared in our modern world.
Yeah.
It would take us a long time for us to trust them to start doing...
menial
jobs.
Work.
Especially jobs like cops where you like rely on them more when the worst case. Because people are tribalistic by default. And
sure.
So when there's difference, especially as different as like an orc is to a human, if that just showed up one day, it would take us a long fucking time to trust that.
To see that as an authoritative figure,
I mean,
or someone who's going to
help you. When we discovered there were other races that looked a tiny bit different than us, how long did it take us to be okay with that?
Right,
I mean, you can imagine if there was actually real.
Well, you would hope that the let's say the modern, you know, our modern what's it called,
sensibilities
would hopefully accelerate that process.
No fucking way. Because honestly, I mean, like, there's no case for the case of race to make for why you would be scared of any particular race. But if orcs suddenly show up, they very well could be inherently dangerous. I mean,
sure.
Orcs in the Lord of the Rings series are basically inherently evil creatures.
Yeah.
Like goblins and all that kind of stuff. Like, they are not to be trusted.
Right, right.
Like, it's in a way, it would be okay to be racist against orcs in the Lord of the Rings
I get it, yeah,
right?
In that idea. Because they have
because they aren't good by default.
Well,
they're bastardizations of man that are made in evil magic.
Right,
so
right,
it's
right,
like...
Yeah.
You would have
a reason to be suspicious.
Being against that is okay.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's
I get that.
It's a crazy thing to...
I think it is certainly, you know, I applaud it in that I think it's a cool mashup. Like, I like that they took those two things and were like, all right, modern day, you know, cop, you know, training day, and then we'll throw orcs and Lord of the Rings characters in it, you know.
Right.
I think that was kind of a fun thing. Now, obviously, they weren't able to flesh it out and really give it that proper attention.
Poorly written, to be
honest. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a cool concept, but with a poor execution. Yeah.
Well, you just got that concept, but you didn't want to put in all the time to actually
flesh it out
to get to that point in a way that would feel realistic.
You had a cool idea, but you weren't able to create a world that made it reasonable.
Right.
So yeah, I get that. So that's not really I can't really give you too much on that from a science perspective, but
said, it's not really a science.
Oh, I wanted to bring up one more thing.
Sure.
That I always love because I had rewatched these all the time is like the whole Matrix series. And I think I don't want to get too bogged down in that, but I really hate how they changed the Morpheus dialogue when he's explaining to Neo why the human beings are farmed in the Matrix.
They changed it? What do you mean?
So originally the idea was that the humans, because the machines didn't want to kill the humans outright.
Well, was there a re-release of the movie?
No, the Animatrix. Did you ever, there was a prequel, like,
Animatrix?
Animated. Yeah, so there's a prequel animated, like movie or series of episodes that were released after the Matrix.
And it's called Animatrix.
Animatrix, yeah.
I have never.
Yeah,
heard
this. So look, this it kind of like details the history of the AI machines and the humans.
Oh, this is an anime.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so it kind of gave you all the backstory.
It's kind of 2003.
Yeah, so it came out like right after the.
Did this come out before the sequel? No. When did?
I thought the Matrix
was 99.
Well, I thought it was 2000, like one something like that, or 2002.
Nope, The Matrix is 99.
Oh, it is 99.
And this
okay.
is 2000. So when did the sequels come out?
I think
for it,
didn't they come out like pretty soon afterwards, or was it like 2002 or 2001? Because
I was thinking if that's 03, then the sequels it might have been before or during the sequels.
Well, what I'm saying is like the explanation that I'm saying was given in the first Matrix.
Yeah.
So that it was given in the first Matrix, but it was detailing why.
That was before the sequels.
Wow,
that's
wow,
crazy.
Okay. So what I'm saying is like the reason that they gave in the Animatrix as to why the machines were keeping the humans was because they were using their collective neural computational ability, right? They were using that as a way of preserving the humans, yep. And they were and that's why they came up with the Matrix altogether. I mean, in the movie explanation, there's no reason to keep the humans alive because, first of all, humans don't create 25,000 BTUs, which is just another way of expressing energy, so joules for anybody who's out there interested. Mm-hmm. What
they say they do in the Matrix?
Yeah, so when Morpheus is giving Neo kind of the breakdown of what happened, you know, why they're in the situation that they're in, you know, he's like, he basically does the whole battery comparison, but in reality, or in more accurately, what he should have said was he should have, instead of the human being a battery, it should have been human being a CPU or like a computational source. And so that part to me was it makes no sense because like human beings are really bad at converting energy. I mean, that's why we freeze to death really easily. I mean, we give off a moderate, you know, a little bit of heat and electricity, but we basically our big thing is you know, neural energy metabolism.
And watch
it's not so much
the Matrix, the whole series again. Yeah. I've seen it before, but it's been a long time because I was never a huge fan of it in general. I know a lot of people love it a lot.
But what I'm saying is that the science doesn't back up any of those claims.
If I'm not mistaken, by the third movie, I'm pretty sure there was more to it for why.
Oh no, there was. There was. I mean, they get a little bit more into
just because they're giving off energy.
No, I mean the idea is as far as I'm aware in the movies, like they don't go into any reason more as to why they have them around, because the whole point is that the idea is that the mankind blotted out the sky so that the machines couldn't use solar power,
and so
it seems like
it'd
be
the world
more
is barren, so that might be one of the. I mean, that doesn't make
any
sense.
But it doesn't make sense
because
there's so
many
other sources of energy. Yeah. I mean, nuclear power, geothermal. I mean, all of these would give you way more energy than harvesting human beings.
I always
the only reason to keep the human beings is because you don't want to destroy them.
Right. I always kind of thought it had more to do with a power element to it, you know, like a subservience.
Right. So if they wanted to use them in that capacity, so if they wanted to use them in
it would
a
make more sense to actually have them do manual labor while
or just use them as biocomputers. Like we're a great the human brain is 8 pounds worth of the fastest computer that faster than we can build build comparable to silicon.
Yeah.
So the idea is that if you could use us as a biocomputer, that would make sense. But then again,
we just sit there and be a bunch of little Bitcoin miners.
But we would just be brains. We wouldn't be full human bodies. I mean, there's no reason for
that.
You'd
have to keep the whole body. I mean, that would probably be the easiest way to do it.
No, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it seems like it'd be way easier to just feed brains than it would be to feed bodies. Because, again, your bodies are horribly inefficient.
Well, I always thought it was strange that when Neo woke up from the Matrix, he was still in, like, good shape and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, they do say that he had never used his muscles and he had truly atrophied. Now, obviously, they couldn't atrophy the real character. They can't atrophy Keanu Reeves.
Hey, man. Christian Bale did it for The Machinist.
That's true. That is true. He did. But, like, it'd be very difficult to, like, do that, but he was thin the whole movie. He wasn't like because in the Matrix they basically rebuild him and he's a normal guy again. So it'd be very that would be very logistically difficult.
The Wachowskis really for whatever they have this long career, but they really have only made like two good things: Matrix 1 and V for Vendetta.
Yeah, I suppose that's
and
true.
Everything else, Jupiter Ascending, Cloud Atlas, all this other shit, Sense8, that fucking TV show on Netflix, this other
stuff. Oh, is that that's
garbage.
Them too?
Yeah,
oh, I forgot about that. I saw the first season.
They
of
made
that
Speed Racer reboot.
Oh,
that was
right.
Terrible.
That was
Man,
garbage.
Yeah, they're.
I get you. It's like an
I've
M Night.
Really
it's like
gotten,
an M Night Shyamalan kind of thing.
I've never
like,
really gotten. Well, even at least M Night has a lot more going for him than they do. I feel like.
I guess, but what I'm saying is like there's a lot of hit. There's a lot of like for him. That's a lot of hit or miss. Mostly miss, I think, for him.
Yeah,
but.
I like much more. What's it? The Sixth Sense. I like Signs.
The Village.
The Village is not considered one of his good ones. But I like
it. I didn't. I thought it was okay.
It's just not what people, I think, expected.
No, not at all. Which is kind of his MO, right? I mean, that's the whole.
A little bit, yeah.
Subverting expectation.
What am I missing from M. Night? There's one big. Unbreakable, that was the other
one. Oh, and then how was it Glass and then
well,
and didn't
Split,
he also do Split?
Glass and The Visit are his more recent stuff,
yeah.
Which is a little bit more divisive.
Was it Mr. Glass or just Glass?
No, it's just Glass. I haven't seen Glass. I saw Split and liked it okay.
Oh, Glass is garbage.
The Visit was kind of funny.
Oh, wait, is The Visit the one where
the crazy
Yeah,
cameras.
No, that's good. That's real. I like that one. That one is really good.
That's crazy.
But the Glass was that was such a letdown.
Yeah,
for me.
People don't
cuz Unbreakable
Glass.
Was good. And Split was good, but Glass was just terrible. Cause I'm a huge Samuel L. Jackson fan, and
it just had been too long for him to try to wrap Split around to be a sequel, half sequel, or whatever
to
bring them all together with old Samuel L. Jackson and old Bruce Willis. It just felt like too much.
Yeah,
agreed. Felt dumb. I haven't seen it though, so I can't speak on it yet. Anyway,
I was going to ask you before if we need to wrap up. Is there any other like lingering science questions in movies that you've seen that you didn't understand? That maybe I'd be able to cast some light on.
I need you to watch Tenet.
Yes, I really, I do. You're right. I tried.
Because Tenet is a crazy.
Is that more time travel or is
well,
that more.
Yeah,
okay, that's
yeah,
what I thought. Yeah.
But it's in a very. It's time travel in a very different way.
Yeah, it's time travel because it's things moving. Because I saw the first 20 minutes or something, the first blurry 20
yes,
minutes.
Things moving in reverse.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot more to it than
right,
that.
Yeah.
It gets kind of wild. I think it's not as crazy, ridiculous. You know, the second time you see it.
Yeah.
Let's
say maybe like an
think.
Inception or something, or more crazy than Inception.
I think Inception holds up scientifically a little more than this one does. Just because it seems more feasible.
Sharing a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, they never really tell you how they do that.
Yeah.
Other than it was just a military. Yeah, wires. Yeah, it was just a military experiment. Yeah. Like, how are you giving somebody an IV and then you're all sharing an IV and then somehow that translates to sharing
a
dream?
It's just liquid LSD.
Shit. All right. I mean, that. All right. I could buy that. I would buy that. That would be more like a shared.
It's like a very specific dosing, and you're all doing it at once in the same environment. You just share trip. That's all it is.
Okay. That I could understand. That would make some sense.
So trying out a little something new. Hopefully, it wasn't too in the weeds science for all you nerds out there.
Well, I mean, it makes me feel better because then whenever I listen to your podcasts and I hear you guys start like rambling off about some science or medical tangent, I'm like, oh god, here we go. This will be terrible.
So if you're a science or medical nerd out there, hopefully this helped out. I felt lost for most of it. But well, yeah, that's been us.
Yeah,
you've
thanks.
Been you.
Thanks for having me on. It was fun as always. And
we usually do plugs here, but I don't plug anything. If you're already here, you already know what the fuck.
My email address is no. Yeah, just call
if
me
you
directly.
Hire Jonah for a job.
Yeah, for a scientific consultant.
Link his.
You could
link his resume in the
description. Link my resume and link my Instagram, I guess. That would be good. I don't even remember what my Instagram is.
I'm
I think it's just
sure
Jonah2012. I think that's
anyway,
it. Oh, is it private? Oh, well then fuck you guys. Yeah, I don't
But yeah, that's it. All right. Fuck
thanks,
y'all.
Man. Nice.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll
no worries.
See Tyler Beale next week and we'll be all gravy. All right. See you later.